And continue right on into it. We're now joined by the driver of the number two Team Penske Ford Mustang, Austin Cindric. We'll jump straight into questions with Austin. We'll go ahead and start. We'll go with Kelly and then Jacob over here.
Kelly Crandall, racer.com. Austin, I wanted to bring up something that Denny had said about you this week when he was reviewing the 500. I don't know if you heard it, but he said, it's why, in my opinion, one of the greatest super speedway drivers we've got is Austin Cindric, and he was complimentary of just how you race in the 500, not throwing blocks, kind of just your racing IQ, I guess you could say. First off, I wanted to get your reaction to hearing that from someone like Denny.
I think for me, it's a very high compliment. You know, not oftentimes do you get to earn the respect, but also hear the level of respect that your competitors have for you. So as far as super speedway racing goes, you know, Denny's been one of the best for the last couple of decades, and to have his a high opinion like that is pretty cool. And I think that's what made the end of the race, you know, significant and special for me at the time, and in reflection, is just knowing that I was going to have to outduel him if I wanted to win the Daytona 500.
To follow up on that, what is it about the even Atlanta, to include in that with Talladega and Daytona, what is it about these drafting style racetracks that brings you confidence? That is it the car, the style of racing? How confident do you feel about the moves that you make and getting the job done at these places?
Well, I think I can plead the fifth and just tell you I got a fast race car every time, because I do. I feel confident we can try and contend for the pole today and try and contend for the win tomorrow. But I think all of them are different, and I think if you want to be able to expect yourself to contend every time we go to a drafting track, you know, I feel like you have to prepare, and I feel like the process that I've, you know, kind of refined for myself over the years in my prep work is pretty solid. I don't know if it's the best or not, hard to say, but I put a lot of work in, and usually those are the tracks that require that type of work.
Okay, we're going to go with Jacob over here, and then we're going to come back to the center with Lee and then Holly.
Jacob Seelman, Race Face Digital. Austin, we've heard a lot of people already talk about this weekend how different Atlanta super speedway racing is compared to Daytona and Talladega. You guys, as Team Penske, obviously dominated the 500. What can you take away from the 500 that does translate to Atlanta, and what maybe doesn't translate that we don't necessarily see?
Yeah, I think it is simple. I think you can translate the speed. You know, I certainly expect us to be able to bring the same or similar speed to what we had during Daytona and Speed Weeks. But the handling element of Atlanta, you know, and this track aging and changing a bit, and the conditions being sensitive to this place, I feel like that's what really defines the racing each time that we've come here. And you know, being able to stay close to guys is purely an effect of the handling of the cars. We've had some pretty good handling race cars here in the past, but that's something that, yeah, handling matters at Daytona, but maybe in some more specific areas, whereas if you want to compete, you know, this weekend, you have to be able to have a car that can handle well in the pack.
Go to Lee.
Lee Spencer, SiriusXM NASCAR Radio and CatchFence.com. Austin, what do you think, or how do you think the changes to COTA next week is going to affect the dynamic of the race?
I think shortening the track definitely changes quite a few things. One, lap count, obviously, from a fan standpoint, I think that's more than anything else, right? We get more laps around the sun, and being able to, I guess that changes, you know, some of the race for sure. But it also eliminates half the racetrack. So how much do you prioritize the other corners that still exist on the racetrack? You know, there's a lot of new pavement areas as well. So how much of it's just going to be completely different anyway? But past that, you know, there's still plenty of elements to take away. It's a very unique circuit that I feel like, with all 20 turns on it, you kind of can't specialize your car. There's a fairly equal amount of left and rights. So there's a fairly equal amount of high speed and low speed corners. Whereas now I feel like you could make the argument there's definitely more low speed corners. So being able to understand what it's going to take to be faster on there, I think being able to adapt and understand what's best. But as far as the racing's concerned, I still think you got a pretty good brake zone into turn one. You still got a pretty good brake zone into turn 12, albeit you're not going 180 into the corner anymore. And I feel like the passing zones in kind of that stadium section there, 13 through 16, all those passing zones still apply. So I feel like you've kept a lot of the core passing zones with making a shorter lap.
Come to Holly next.
Morning, Austin. Holly Kane with the NASCAR Wire Service. Kind of along the lines of what Kelly was asking you, but have you seen kind of an evolution in your career? Obviously, you felt comfortable racing at super speedways. You've done well, but it's kind of a different level now where others are talking about you, or people name you as one of the first or two drivers that they want to work with if they're racing on a super speedway. Could you just talk about how that feels, you know, that kind of evolution or change in your career from other people understanding and recognizing what you do?
Yeah, it's certainly something I never expect to hear, but you know, anything you work hard at, you certainly want to be able to see the progress in it, whether if it's, you know, from your competitors or you're from yourself or within your own team. You know, I can think of my first truck race that I did on first two truck races I did on speedways. I hated it. Like, I hated it because I didn't understand it. And then even when we did the first race here after the repave, I hated it. But that's because I didn't understand it. And now I come here, I feel like I look forward to it. So I think that's a huge evolution, and that's not just allowing it to happen and understanding, you know, you got to get better to enjoy this, right? You know, I only have fun if I'm, you know, out there trying to be successful. And, you know, if there's an impact on others around me, positive or negative, you know, so be it. But, you know, it's a challenging thing to be able to make progress like that at a level this high. And, you know, it's only one area in you know, what we do. You know, we have probably, what, 8 races at Speedway racetracks, and a lot of others at a lot of different racetracks. So my goal as a race car driver in NASCAR is to be able to look at myself or you know, my competitors look at me, you know, in a similar fashion at all styles of racetracks. But I guess one's a good start. I mean, I guess it's better than being a rookie. I feel like I'm kind of in that middle phase to where you're not, I guess I use the Xfinity Series as an example. When I first got to the Xfinity Series, you know, everyone tried to stay away from me. By the time I was done in the Xfinity Series, you know, I felt like I could be trusted as a friendly source of how to get to the front. So I feel like I'm in the middle of that right now. I can't expect help, and I feel like you really can, especially when there's so many different factors, and, you know, as far as teammates and manufacturers and this and that. I don't ever expect anyone to go out of their way to help me or do what's in my best interest. And I feel like that's kind of a baseline understanding of, you know, how you have to approach your competition. And if you get something that's, you know, goes your way, you either take it in stride or remember it for next time.
All right, real quickly, we'll just end here with Mike over here on the side.
Mike Embry, Auto Week. Austin, it's not unusual for there to be big wrecks at Daytona, but the Priest wreck was unusual. Does the way that car reacted cause any different kinds of concerns for you? And are there, or should there be more ways to try to keep these cars on the ground?
Well, when I look at that wreck, I feel like it's really not a whole lot different than what we saw Bowman Gray, you know, with the 54, you know, getting him. I know I was going to bring it up, but yeah, sorry. No, but I mean, that's a car going, what, 30 miles an hour that has side-to-side contact and the nose pops up, you know, 2 or 3 feet up off the ground. I feel like with any car at 160, 170 miles an hour, if you'd have pop the nose up off the ground 3 or 4 feet, you're going to get air to parachute under the car no matter how flat the floor is. It's still going to do that, in my opinion. I'm not an engineer. I don't study these things, but I've seen enough cars and enough – I have basic enough understanding of how the air works to know that the air is going to pool up under the bottom of the car. Now, whether if the car takes off or stays longer in the air, so be it. You know, so I feel like that wreck isn't really similar at all to some of the wrecks we saw at Daytona in August last year, where you had guys spinning around and getting air caught up underneath the car and it causing a liftoff event. So from that standpoint, I think it's more of just the car got in the air and stayed in the air for a little while. So I'm sure Ryan probably has a different take on all that. But I would say that's why the car got in the air, was because of the contact, not because of, you know, being put in a bad aero spot.
All right, Austin. Well, thank you for your time. Good luck in qualifying and the race tomorrow.
Cool. Thank you all.